turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. One of the more fundamental and certainly action-packed, feature-shocked, and extremely vital sets of stories in the entire Torah. This is in chapter 18. So that's where we turn to the book of Genesis, or Bereshit, chapter 18, verse 1. And it says, Vayera. Oh, there we go. That's the name of the portion. Vayera. And appeared Yahuwah unto him. Who are we talking about? Well, we're talking about Abraham. By the terebinths at Mamre, as he sat in the tent door during the heat of the day. He lifted up his eyes, and look, there's three men over there. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door. He bowed down to the earth, and he said, Adonai, my Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not, I pray you, pass away from your servant. Let me get some water for you. Wash your feet. Just have a seat. Recline yourselves under the tree, and I will go fetch a morsel of bread. And you stay your heart. After that, you can pass on as much as you have come to see your servant here. And they said, okay, yeah, sounds good. So do as you have said. So Abraham hastened into the tent, and he told Sarah now, make ready quickly 3 measures of fine meal, knead it, make some cakes. Abraham then ran out to the herd, fetched a good and tender calf, gave it to a servant, who hastened to dress it. And here is where the rabbis will kind of overlook the fact that Abraham made what amounts to a cheeseburger. He mixed milk and dairy products with meat in the same meal. He took curd and milk and the calf, which he dressed, set it before them, stood by him under the tree, and they all ate. And then he said to them, where is Sarah? They said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? Well, he said, in the tent. And he, and at this point the English rendering capitalizes it, we're going to see that Abraham seems to know who this is. He said, I will certainly return unto you when the season comes round, and lo, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. Say, what? Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him, and it says here, parenthetically, okay, we have these two people, Abraham and Sarah, and they are both they're well up there in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So basically, it sounds like she's way postmenopausal. Sarah laughed within herself, and she said, am I, who have waxed old, going to have pleasure? My Lord, he's old too. And notice at this point we get a change, because now it changes and says, and Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh at this point said unto Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I of a surety bear a child whom old? Is anything too hard for Yahuwah? At the set time, he said, I will return unto you when the season comes around, and Sarah shall have a son. And Sarah denied, oh, no, I didn't laugh, she said, because she was kind of afraid. That's embarrassing to be caught laughing, I guess. He said, no, but you did laugh. The men rose up from there. They looked out towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And at this point, Yahuwah said, shall I hide from Abraham that which I'm doing? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all of the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. He is reminding everyone of the promises already made. For I have known him to the end that he may command his children, his household after him, that they may keep the way of Yahuwah to do righteousness and justice, to the end that Yahuwah may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. And then Yahuwah said, verily, the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great. And you know what? Verily, their sin is exceedingly grievous. So I'm going to go on down there now, see whether they've done altogether according to the cry of it, the things that I have heard, which has come unto me. If not, I'll know. Then the men turned from there. They went on towards Sodom. But Abraham stood yet before Yahuwah. So he is essentially going to do one of the more bold things that we're going to see in the book here. And he said, will you indeed sweep away the righteous along with the wicked? Hey, just suppose, peradventure, there are 50 righteous men in that city. Would you indeed sweep away and not forgive that place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That would be far from you to do after this matter, to slay the righteous along with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Let that be far from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do justly? Now, I can't help but think Yahuwah is probably listening to this and thinking, yeah, this is the guy I picked. And he said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous men within the city, well, then I will forgive them, and I'll forgive the place for their sake. So Abraham answered, he said, okay, look, behold, now I've taken it upon myself to speak unto Yahuwah. Who am I but dust and ashes? I suppose we get close, but we're just short, maybe five folks from that 50 number. Will you destroy all the city for lack of five? And he said, nope, I will not destroy it if in fact there are 40 and five. And then he spoke unto him yet again. He said, well, suppose there's 40 that are found there. Answer, I won't do it for the sake of the 40. And he said, okay, let not Yahuwah be angry, and I'll speak. Peradventure, 30 are found in there. And the response, I will not do it if I find 30 there. 30. And he said, oh, okay, behold, I have taken it upon myself to speak unto Yahuwah. Peradventure, there should be found 20 there. And you know the answer, I will not destroy it for the sake of the 20. And then he said, oh, okay, oh, let not Yahuwah be angry, and I'll speak just one more time. Peradventure, we find 10 in the city. And the response, I will not destroy it for the sake of the 10. So Yahuwah went on his way as soon as he had left off speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place. Now we get the shift of scenery at this point. We're down to two Malachim. Doesn't actually tell us. Some might suggest or think maybe it's the same two that were with Yah before, but it actually doesn't explicitly say that as far as I'm aware. But we get the two angels. So at least by context, maybe it is. Anyway, two Malachim came to Sodom at evening. Lot was sitting in the gate there at Sodom, and he saw him, and he rose up to meet him, and he fell down on his face to the earth. And he said, behold, now, my lords, turn aside, I pray you, into your servant's house. Come on over, in other words, and stay the night, and wash your feet, and you can rise up early and go on your way. And they said, no, no, but we will abide in the broad place all night. Well, Lot wasn't having that. He urged them greatly. They turned into him, and they did enter his house, and he made them a feast. He baked unleavened bread and ate. Before they lay down, the men of Sodom, compassed the house round about, both young and old, it says, all kinds of folks from every quarter. And they called out to Lot, and they said unto him, hey, where are those men that came into you this evening, this night? Bring them out to us, so that we might, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know them. They basically intend to gang rape them, it sounds like, folks. Lot then went out to the door, and he shut the door behind him, and he said, I pray you, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. Behold, now look, I have two daughters. Now, this is one of those things that also tends to kind of raise eyebrows. He's going to offer up his daughters in place of the men. Yes, there is an importance of hospitality, but honestly, I think most of us think, whoa. All right, behold, I have two daughters that are virgins. They've not known men. Let me, I pray you, bring them out to you. Do to them as is good in your eyes. Unto the men, though, do nothing, for as much as they've come under the shadow of my roof. And they said, stand back. And then they said, this fella came to sojourn, talking about Lot while he's standing there. He needs to play the judge, and we will now deal worse with you than with them. So they pressed in upon the men, even Lot, and they drew near to breaking down the door. But the men put forth their hand, meaning the Malachim that were inside. They brought Lot back in the house, and they shut the door. Meanwhile, they smote the men at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves trying to find the door. Men said unto Lot, hey, anybody else in there besides you? Son-in-law, daughters-in-law, and your daughters, whoever you have in this city, bring them out of this place. So basically, they're telling Lot, look, you see what's going on here? You don't know the half of it. We're going to destroy this place, because the cry of them has waxed great before Yahuwah, and Yahuwah has sent us to do that, to destroy it. So Lot went out. He spoke unto his sons-in-law. So he was lying, too, who married his daughters. And I'm sure the sons-in-law are probably just thrilled that Lot offered them up to these men to have their way with them. And he said, get yourselves out of this place, because Yahuwah is fixing to destroy the city. But he seemed to his sons-in-law as one that jested. By the way, the same root word here is laughter. When the morning came around, the angels hastened Lot. They said, arise, get your wife, get your two daughters. They're all here, lest they be swept away in the iniquity of this city. But Lot tarried. He lingered. The man finally laid hold on his hand, and upon the hand of his wife, and the hand of his two daughters, Yahuwah being merciful unto him. And they brought him out, and they set him outside the city. So Yahuwah was merciful, and he brought everybody that was in the house along, whether they liked it or not. Notice the sons-in-law have disappeared. Came to pass, when they brought them forth outside the city, that he said, look, escape for your life. Do not look behind you. Do not stay in all the plains. Get away to the mountains. Escape to the mountains, lest you be swept away. And Lot said to him, Oh, no, no, my Lord. Behold now, your servant has found grace in your sight. You have magnified your mercy, which you've shown unto me in saving my life. Isn't that nice of him? And I can't escape to the mountain, lest the evil overtake me and I die. So behold, this city, this is near. It's a close place we could flee to. It's a little one. Oh, let me go over there, escape there. Isn't that just a little city? So that my soul might live. And he said unto him, See, I have accepted you concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow that city of which you have spoken. So Lot is pushing it. Hasten thou, escape over there. Get on there, because I can't do anything till you have come thither. So you get over there rapidly, because I'm holding things back until you're there. So the name of that city was called Zoar. The sun was risen upon the earth when Lot came unto Zoar. And Yahuwah caused the rain upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, a rain of fire and brimstone from Yahuwah out of Hashemayim, out of the heavens. He overthrew the cities, the whole plain, and all of the inhabitants of the cities, everything which grew upon the ground. But Lot's wife, it says, his wife, looked back. And this is an interesting word. The Hebrew root has to do with not just turning around and looking back, but the implication is she looked back with longing or with care or with favor. Like, oh, that was such a nice place. I'm going to miss it. She looked back and she was turned into a pillar of powder. Now, some of the renderings will say salt, and indeed, that's basically what people are made out of, is one kind of salt or another, mostly sodium chloride salt, but there are lots and lots of other salts in the human body. Whatever it was, she became a powder of those various salts, which kind of tells you that was not a good thing to do. Abraham, back to him, got up early in the morning to the place where he had stood before Yahuwah, and he looked out towards Sodom and Gomorrah, toward the land of all the plain, and behold, look, the smoke of the land went up as the smoke of a furnace. So he sees a huge cloud coming up, and it's pretty clear what has happened. Came to pass when Yahuwah destroyed the cities of the plain that Elohim remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt. Now Lot then eventually went up out of Zoar, that little city that was not too far away, and he did dwell in the mountain, as he was told to. His two daughters were with him. He feared to dwell in Zoar, so he dwelt in a cave along with his two daughters. Now we're going to get the story of the birth of, an incestuous bunch of folks, the Moabites. Firstborn then said to the younger daughter, Look, our dad, he's getting pretty old. There's not a man in the earth to come into us after the manner of all the earth. I think all the men are gone at this point. I guess they figure they're widows at this point as well. Dad's old, but he's all we got. So come on, let's just get our dad drunk. We'll make him drunk on wine. We will lie with him, and that way we can preserve the seed of our father. So they made their father drink wine that night. The firstborn went in and lay with him. And he didn't know when she came in or when she arose. Came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn then said to the younger one, Look, I lay with Dad last night, so let's get him drunk again tonight. Also, you go in and you lie with him, that we may preserve the seed of our father. Now, this is one of those places where there's a lot of talk in Scripture about righteous Lot, and yet, this one, I'll admit, there's a little bit of an eyebrow raising goes on here. I always have to wonder just how righteous Lot really is. Because the first night, you could say, well, maybe he didn't know what was going on. A second night, you're thinking, is he really this ignorant? Okay, the Scripture is silent on that fact. But it does kind of, not as bad as the election, mind you, not that kind of obvious in-your-face whoppers. But certainly, the fact that he let it happen again does seem just a bit suspicious, like he isn't perhaps all that in a bag of chips when it comes to righteousness. So, they did it again. They made their dad get drunk with wine that night, too. Younger daughter went in and lay with him, and one more time, he didn't know when she came in, lay down, or when she arose. Thus, it says, both of the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. Firstborn bore a son, and his name, as you already probably are aware, was called Moab, and the same is the father of the Moabites that came later. To this day, it says. Then the younger, she also bore a son. She called his name Ben, or son, Ammi. Ammi, the people, my people, son of my people. The same then is the father of the children of Ammon, a.k.a. the Ammonites, unto this day. All right, back to another story with Abraham. He journeyed from there toward the land of the south. He dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and sojourned in Gerar. And again, Abraham said of Sarah his wife, "She's my sister." Abimelech, my father the king, king of Gerar, sent, and he took Sarah. Just exactly, almost a repetition of what we've seen before. But Elohim, it said, came to Abimelech in a dream of the night and said to him, "Behold, you are going to die." You know why? Because you have taken that woman, and she is a man's wife. In other words, you would be committing adultery with her. Now, Abimelech, this time it tells us, and notice it didn't tell us before, this time it says he had not done the deed with her, he had not come near her, and he said, "Yahuwah, are you going to slay even a righteous nation?" Didn't she say herself, didn't she tell me herself, "She is my sister," and she herself said, "He's my brother. In the simplicity of my heart, I have done this thing, and also in the innocence of my hands." So he is making a plea here. Yah says to him in a dream, "Yep, I know that in the simplicity of your heart you've done this. And I also withheld you from sinning against me. So I protected you. Therefore, I suffered you not to touch her." So tell you what, you now restore that man's wife, because he is a prophet, and he will pray for you. And you shall live. And if you don't restore her, though, it ain't going to go so well. Know that you will surely die. And this is another one of those places. It's probably one of my favorite in the Scripture when it comes to the double use of the Hebrew word, making it very emphatic. It says in the English, "You shall surely die." And in the Hebrew, the word mot is to die. And it's literally mot to mot. And I like the rendering. Probably the best way to render this into English, maybe not as simple, but it kind of conveys the imperative here, I think, a little bit better. "Dying, you shall die." All right? And if you remember the line from the Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, she's not only merely dead, she's really most sincerely dead. "Dying, you shall die." So far, not only that, but all of your family. They're all dead too. So he gets the message. Abimelech got up early in the morning. He called all of his servants, and he told all of these things in their ears, scared to you know what, out of all the men. They were sore afraid. So they got the message. Abimelech then called Abraham, and he said to him, "What the heck have you done to us? And wherein have I bothered, sinned against you, that you have brought on me and my kingdom such a great sin? You have done things to me that, honestly, guy, shouldn't ought to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you see that you have done this thing?" Now, interestingly, and I give Abimelech a lot of credit, he does the right thing. He then goes to Abraham, and he does what Scripture says. He asks, "What the heck is going on here? Why have you done this?" And he not only does that, he listens. And the response is interesting. Abraham, it says, said to him, "Because I thought to myself, surely the fear of Elohim is not in this place." Now, let's pause. Okay, because if I was to look at words in this Torah portion and say, does that sound like something that rings throughout the millennia? And I look at the swamp, and I look at America with a K, and I look at a nation that does not even allow God in the schools, the halls of Congress, the Supreme Court building. He's not welcome, certainly not in the White Whorehouse. "Surely the fear of Elohim is not in this place." And Abraham said, "They're going to slay me. They'll kill me for my wife's sake, just so they can take her." Nowadays, folks, they'll kill the whole families with the poison poke, take the kids and cut off their genitalia, and then abuse them. Sodom got nothing on the things that are going on now. But isn't it interesting, as we look at this story, you just plain can't help but see the parallels. They ring throughout this entire set of stories in Vayera. All right, so Abraham is telling him, the fear of Elohim is not in this place. That was the reason why I... by the way, I didn't lie to you, because moreover, he says, she really is my sister. She's the daughter of my father, but she is not the daughter of my mother. So she's my half-sister through dad's other wife. So she became my wife. Now, it came to pass when Elohim caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, "Hey, here's what I'd like you to do. This is the kindness that you shall show to me. Every place where we shall come, you say, 'He's my brother.'" No, not he ain't heavy. Just say he's my brother. Abimelech took sheep and oxen, men servants and women servants, and he gave them all unto Abraham, and he restored unto him Sarah his wife. And Abimelech said the following. Now, you can kind of catch the drift here. Behold, the whole land is before you. Go and dwell wherever it pleases you. But do it somewhere else. The whole land is before you. Go and dwell wherever you'd like. To Sarah, he said, look, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, it is for you a covering of the eyes to all that are with you. And before all men, you are right. In other words, hopefully, this will help to restore your good name and your reputation. Hang on. So, true to form, as Abimelech was told, this man is a prophet, he will pray for you. And it says, Abraham did. He prayed unto Elohim, and Elohim healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bore children. Because Yahuwah had closed up fast all the wombs of the entire house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Now, chapter 21 tells us, hey, what about that child, remember? They were told about 9 months, not quite a year from now, he'll come back. Yahuwah had remembered. Now, this is one of those interesting things. Rashi has quite a treatment of the Hebrew word here, but essentially the best rendering in English is something along the lines of he had already remembered Sarah, as he had said. And Yahuwah did unto Sarah as he had spoken. So, Sarah conceived. She bore Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which Yahuwah had spoken to him. And exactly as you would expect, Abraham called the name of the son that was born unto him, whom Sarah, his wife, bore to him, Yitzhak. And the root word, of course, means laughter. Abraham circumcised his son Isaac on the eighth day, when he was 8 days old, as Yahuwah had commanded him. And at this point it says, Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. And here comes the closure of the circle, having to do with the name of this man, at this point a baby boy, and laughter. Sarah said, Elohim has made laughter for me, literally, on every level, right? She laughed. I am laughing about this, and I have a son now whose name literally has this remembrance of laughter in his very name. Everyone that hears this story, and we've been hearing this story, folks, for multiple thousands of years, everyone that hears this will laugh on account of me, and that too is prophetic. She said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah should give children suck? Because I have now borne him a son in his old age. All right, the child grew, he was weaned, and then Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. And now we're going to get another problem. It says, Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian. Now, we know the young man's name at this point, but it's not used here, and that's always kind of interesting. Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, notice how he's described, whom she had borne unto Abraham, making sport. Now, mocking is another way to render it. But guess what? The very same root word is in here. It's metzachak. Literally, he was doing something that had to do with laughter or mocking. And the general understanding is, yeah, this probably is a sexual reference. He is doing something crude, disrespectful, or worse to this boy. So, therefore, she said to Abraham, get rid of this guy. Cast out this bondwoman and her son, because the son of this bondwoman isn't going to be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And, as the Bible tells us, this was very grievous in Abraham's sight. It upset him something fierce, too. It was very grievous. And Elohim said to Abraham, do not let it be grievous in your sight because of the lad, because of the bondwoman. In all that Sarah has said unto you, okay, hearken unto her voice. Because you know what? Just as you were told, in Isaac shall your seed be called unto you. Now, of the son of the bondwoman I will make a nation, because, as I promised you, he didn't repeat that part here, but he did say, he is your seed. So Abraham got up early in the morning. He took bread and a bottle of water. He gave it to Hagar. He put it on her shoulder along with the child, and he shalached her. He sent her out, and she departed, and she strayed in the wilderness of Beersheba. And at this point, of course, that's a dry and forlorn place. Water in a bottle eventually ran out. She cast the child under one of the shrubs, and she sat down a good way off, as if it were about a bow shot distance, so maybe 100 yards or more. She said, "Don't let me look upon the death of the child." She sat over against him and lifted up her voice, and she wept. And remember what his name is? Ishmael, El shall hear. And it says, Ve Yishma El Elohim. So if you actually look at the words in the Hebrew here, Ve and Yishma Elohim, exactly as prophesied, and Scripture even puts it, his name, right there in the verse, in the Hebrew. You don't see it in the English. This is one of those really cool things that the Hebrew language, of course, because his name means exactly what he was prophesied about, it is as promised. So, Elohim heard the voice of the lad, and the Malak, the angel of Elohim, called unto Hagar from Hashemayim, and he said to her, "Hey, what's the problem, Hagar? Fear not, for Elohim," here it is again, "has heard, as promised, the voice of the lad where he is." And this time, he's not named. Isn't that interesting? He is not named in this entire sequence, except prophetically. His name appears in there in the Hebrew, but you don't see it in the English translation. "Arise, lift up," what? "The lad, and hold him fast by the hand, because I will make of him a great nation." And Elohim opened her eyes. See, it was there, but she didn't see it. He opened her eyes. She saw a well of water. She went. She filled the bottle. She gave the lad drink. And it says Elohim was with the lad. He grew, and he dwelt in the wilderness, and he became an archer. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran. His mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. And it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, captain of his host, spoke to Abraham. This is the same king we saw, at least same name. And it's a title as much as a name, so we're not 100% sure it's the same one, but it probably is. Anyway, he says, "Elohim is with you in all that you do." He sees that. "So therefore, swear unto me hereby, Elohim, that you will not deal falsely with me." And I guess Abimelech certainly has reason to think, I better parse whatever he's telling me very carefully here. "Don't deal falsely with me, nor with my son, nor my son's son. But according to the kindness that I've done to you, that's what you shall do unto me and to the land wherein you have sojourned." And Abraham says, "I will so swear." So he reproved Abimelech because of the well of water, which Abimelech's servants had violently taken away. "So I do have this problem. You've taken away my well." Abimelech said, "I don't know who's done this, nor did you tell me. I didn't even hear about it up until today." So Abraham took sheep and oxen. He gave them to Abimelech, and the two made a covenant. Made a covenant. Now, this is interesting, too. They basically cut a brit there in the wilderness. And there are some of the sages that suggest, and I don't necessarily buy this, because I think it was a lot more important that what happened in the Akedah, or the Akedah, happened, because it's obviously a foreshadowing. Although, I guess if the sages don't believe in the foreshadowing and understand what was supposed to happen, maybe they'll say, yeah, this was a punishment of Abraham. So it's interesting, at least, see that that's in here and be aware of it as we go through this. Because certainly there's an attempt, at least, to say something about what's coming, and I don't necessarily believe that it's the right twist. Okay, so Abraham, though, he set 7 ewe lambs of the flock off by themselves. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, "What do you mean by these 7 ewe lambs that you set off? Verily," he says, "these 7 ewe lambs shall you take of my hand, that this will be a witness unto me that I'm, in fact, the one who has dug this well." Okay, I want you to take these lambs and use that as an understanding. You're my witness. I dug that well. This is a well that he didn't know about, he said. Therefore, that place was called Beersheba, the well of sevens, because there both of them swore. So they made a covenant at Beersheba, and Abimelech rose up, Phicol, the captain of his host. They returned to the land of the Philistines, basically the coastal area from there. Abraham then planted a tamarisk tree there in Beersheba, the well of sevens, and there he called on the name of El Olam. El Olam. Okay, Olam is forever, right? Yah, the God. El Olam, the everlasting God, is how it's rendered in the English most of the time. Abraham then sojourned. He was there in the land of Philistines for a long time, for many days. Now, finally, we get to what is probably one of the most, well, not just important, but well-known, and I guess of all of the events of Abraham's life, perhaps, the most famous, certainly one of the most representative when it comes to faith. And one of the jokes that I like, you know, you look up faith in a Bible concordance, you see Abraham's picture. And here you go. This is going to be kind of the titular story in that regard. Came to pass after these ha deborim, after these things, these words, these sayings, after all these tests that Elohim did to test, to provoke or prove Abraham, he said unto him, Abraham, and we know the response, right? You ever hear Yah calling out to you? Hineni, here I am. And now he said, take your son, your only son whom you love, even Isaac, and you get up into the land of Moriah, and there offer him for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell you of. So Abraham rose early in the morning. He saddled his ass, took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son. Now, the general understanding is at this point, Isaac is a young man, probably in his 30s, maybe 40 years old. So Isaac has been around a while. This is, it said, many days he had dwelt in the land of the Philistines. Isaac, in other words, at this point, is almost certainly old enough that if he didn't want to go with Dad, Dad would have had a tough time forcing him. So this is an element of the story that's going to play out throughout here. Isaac is going willingly. So he saddles his ass, got two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son. They cleaved the wood for the burnt offering. They rose up. They went to the place of which Elohim had told him. Took a while. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he saw the place afar off. And then he said unto his young man, y'all stay here. Abide here with the ass, and I and the lad will go up yonder, and we'll worship, and then we'll come back to you. Sounds pretty straightforward. We'll go up there, we'll worship, we'll come back to you. You know what? That's exactly how it played out. I don't think he is has any doubts at all. And I've said this, I think probably to my mind, that's what's most interesting about this story. No, this is not sacrificing of Isaac in any way that would fit the pattern that a lot of folks will try to twist it into. Abraham, I believe, knows full well this is the son of promise. He has not even had his own son yet. This is the one that Yah has promised me, through my seed will the nations of the earth be blessed. This is the son through which all of these things are going to happen. Does Isaac know one and one thing for sure? He's coming back down. Dad knows it too. They are both going up that mountain, and he says, we will worship and come back to you. Now, honestly, I don't think Abraham has every bit as great a confidence that he's coming back down the mountain, probably. But he knows. He knows of a certainty that whatever happens up there, Isaac's coming back down. So he took the wood of the burnt offering. He laid it upon Isaac, his son. Notice, what's Isaac doing? He's not fighting. He took in his hand the fire and the knife, and they both of them went together. Again, Scripture reminds us, can two walk together unless they're in agreement? They are walking together in agreement. Abraham, at this point, hears his son say something, and it's some immortal words as well. He said, my father. Answer, Hineni, yep, here I am, my son. And he said, look, here's the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, here are the words that are as prophetic and as poignant and as true as they can get. Elohim will provide himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So the two of them went together. Now, that one, every time I read that, I always think, isn't that interesting? And it reads, essentially translated correctly, in English and in Hebrew, Elohim will provide himself. He will provide, and he will provide himself. Isn't that interesting? The lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So they walked together. They came to the place which Yahuwah had told him of, and Abraham built the altar there. He laid the wood in order. He bound Isaac, his son, and he laid him upon the altar upon the wood. I'll say it one more time. Could this have possibly happened if Isaac was fighting him? And the answer is no. He allowed himself to be bound and put on the wood. Abraham stretched forth his hand. He took the knife to slay his son. Now, there is, of course, a whole lot of speculation about what happened here and how long it took and all those kind of things. But essentially, the story as it reads says that his hand was stayed. I think at this point there are probably a lot of questions running through Abraham's mind, right? How is this going to play out? Am I going to actually go through with this? Am I going to kill my son? Is he going to resurrect him? But at the point where his hand is stayed, the Malak, the messenger of Yahuwah, calls to him from out of Hashemayim, the heavens, and he says, Abraham, Abraham. The response, right? Hineni. And he said, don't lay your hand upon the lad, nor do anything unto him, because now I know. Yada is the root word there. I've seen it firsthand. It has been played out, literally written on the fabric of space-time. You did it. And now I know that you are, in fact, a man who fears Elohim, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Abraham lifted up his eyes, looked, and look over there, a ram caught in the thicket by its horns. So Abraham went, he took that ram, and he offered him up for a burnt offering, tachat, in place of, instead of his son. Now, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, that's one of those other places where you see this word tachat. And literally, it means the scales balance. It is in place of. And here the scales balance too. That is a vitally important understanding. He offered up his son. Now he's offering up the ram, tachat, in place of the son, which he had already offered up. Abraham then called the name of that place Yahuwah Yireh. Yahuwah Yireh. Or as it is said to this day, this is the mountain in which Yahuwah is seen. He saw. Yahuwah, at this point, the angel of Yahuwah calls unto Abraham a second time out of Hashemayim, and he says, by myself have I sworn, said Yahuwah, because you have done this thing. You have not withheld your son, your only son, and here is the promise again. In blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens, as the sand which is upon the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in your seed shall all kol of the families of the earth be blessed, because you have hearkened bekol e. In other words, to my, in my voice. You have hearkened in my voice, or unto my voice. So Abraham returned unto his young men. Remember, just exactly as he said, we're going up there, we're coming back. They rose up, they went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. Came to pass after these things that it was told to Abraham, hey, look, you know what? Milcah, she has borne children unto your brother Nahor. Uz, his firstborn, Buz, his brother, Kemuel, the father of Aram, and Chesed, and Haso, and Pildash, and Yidlaf, and Betuel. And Betuel begot someone. Now, maybe this is the point of the sequence. I'm sure there's other points of the sequence as well. But at this point in the sequence, we see, oh yeah, huh, this does begin to kind of connect, doesn't it? Bethuel begot Rebekah, or Rivka. These eight did Milcah bear unto Nahor, Abram's, now Abraham's, brother. So what we see here, essentially, folks, is the genealogy of this woman, Rivka, and guess what? We're going to find in the next Torah portion that this is vitally important, because there needs to be a wife for Yitzhak. And this next portion will include that story. So with that, the Torah portion ends, well, after one more verse. And his concubine, whose name was Reuma, she also bore Teba and Gaham and Tahash and Ma'acha. So this Nahor has a wife, and Milcah, she has borne children, and also he has a concubine whose name was Reumah, and she bore some children as well, Tabak, Gaham, Tahash, and Ma'achah. And with that genealogy, the Torah portion ends.